What about the budget? Well, there needs to be remuneration. Otherwise, it's coming out of our hide. And you could argue, well, sure, give up doing your tobacco use reduction programs. But we argued that there should be remuneration. We actually got $5 per dose. Doctors are given $8.50 a dose, which means that they're getting $3.50 more. We can barely do it. I would say that many places can't do it because of geography for $5 a dose. So that's something that has to be negotiated with your Ministry of Healthy Living, is it, Eric, or whatever. Be hard-nosed about this if this ever becomes a reality in BC. And then consider the whole issue of hiring casuals versus paying overtime to the to your regular staff. Other things you have to keep in mind, there may be facility fees. If you've got a great facility and they're charging you money for it, I'd say go for it. Better than that, than having an inferior place that you're getting for free. You have to think about supplies, mileage, if you're doing remote areas. And if your staff is there all day long, you may want to think about actually buying them lunch, a very nice thing to do for people who are spending their time on a Saturday or a Sunday away from their families. So what about the program costs? Well, it would have cost about $40 million to do everybody in Ontario, at $3 to $4 a dose. I think we're down clearly perhaps a little less than half that amount. They've spent $4 million on a promotion, and one of the next speakers you'll hear, Dr. McGeer, was very prominent, did a very lovely job at promoting this vaccine for the program. And if you do the math and figure out $5 per dose for public health and $8.50 for family physicians, then we're talking maybe about another $40 million to administer it. So it's not a trivial program. Just keep that in mind because we're going to talk about evaluation a little later on, and I'll be arguing that if a program costs this much money, it needs to be evaluated. The program was promoted. You also, however, need to do local promotion because people want to hear about this, what your local agency is doing. And, of course, you need to tell people either on a website or in some printed thing that they can have in their newspaper bin to tell them when and where the clinics are going to be held. Then there are other issues, informed consent. How do you do informed consent for theoretically 12 million people? Well, you could do it by active discussion, but I can honestly say that we've gone to a more passive format just because of the volume, and I think we have to maybe have some discussion about this. What constitutes a good informed consent for influenza vaccine? Could we do it by giving somebody an information page and asking if they have any questions? Can we show them, the people who are waiting around, a video to give them the background on pros and cons, risks and benefits of influenza vaccine? We've actually gone to a five-year supply for our stock, I should say, for our supplies, needles and syringes. We went to that because, first of all, to ensure we had enough, but second of all, this actually put us in a good position should we ever have to do a lot of people in a pandemic situation. And, sounds like we may get to use a lot of those needles and syringes this autumn. Next thing is how you do, there's cold chain. The other things we have to think about are cold chain, wastage. There's a lot of wastage in the system. This is perhaps the price we pay for having family docs involved, because we all know public health immunizers are cold chain respecters, sans pareil. But when you start sending vaccines out to others to immunize, you get wastage. And this could end up getting close to $1 million per year of wastage. And then there's the issue of record keeping. What we need to have is consistent system across the province, automated with a unique identifier. You should be aware that in Ontario, the OHIP guards the Medicare number like hounds, and it makes it very difficult to use OHIP to be able to follow this along. But we use paper. Other people use automated systems, and we're looking, we hope, at getting the automated system in place very soon. If you're going to spend a lot of money on a vaccine program, you should evaluate it. I couldn't agree more about this. This program was implemented without any consideration of evaluation. It actually took until 2007 for there to be some consideration of this. It was actually led by the Public Health Agency of Canada, who eventually facilitated and funded the evaluation that was done, as you heard, by Jeff Kwong in ISIS. You know that influenza is a difficult organism. It's difficult to monitor, and therefore that makes evaluation difficult. And that's why I'm going to show you a few studies that are contradictory about Ontario's program. Notwithstanding, I think attempts to immunize, to evaluate immunization programs are important, and Ontario was criticized for this. Now, if you don't keep an eye on things, sometimes unwanted bad events can happen. And that's why we want to make sure that we evaluate our programs. The first thing that was published was a paper by Diane Grohl, who actually was working in our unit at the time. This is a little bit embarrassing for me. Who published in the Canadian Journal of Emergency Medical Care. They looked at emergency visits in Kingston, Ottawa, and London and found that only 0.34% of ER visits were owing to influenza complaints. That contradicted the rationale for the whole program. And they concluded that the UIIP is unlikely to affect ER volume. Well, that was the first thing that happened. And then Diane published another paper in Vaccine in 2006 called Incidence of Influenza in Ontario following the UIIP to find out if it had any effect. Actually, they called it the UIIC. And they looked at laboratory-confirmed influenza cases from 1990 to 2005 using a multi-taper time series. I have no idea what that is, so don't please ask me that in questions. And they found no decrease in the mean monthly influenza rate following the introduction of this program and concluded that despite increased vaccine distribution and the financial resources towards promotion, the incidence of influenza in Ontario has not decreased. Very damning. I think created some difficulties, certainly because she was working in our research center at the time. Then Jeff Kwan came back, actually, after the second paper and made these arguments. They said that Grohl and Thompson used per capita cases of lab-confirmed influenza, and they argued that these data are susceptible to viruses and should never be used as an outcome measure. They said a better measure of viral activity is the proportion of influenza tests positive. So you shouldn't be looking at the absolute number, you should be looking at the percentage positive. And therefore said that for evaluating UIIP effectiveness, other established and available measures employed in previous studies describing the epidemiology of influenza should be used instead of lab data. So now we got a slug match going on here. And then Jeff also published in more recently in October last year the paper that Danuta showed you in much more detail. But the conclusion was that compared to targeted programs in other provinces, UIIP was associated with relative reductions in influenza-associated mortality and healthcare use. The results of this large-scale natural experiment suggest that the UIIP may be an effective public health measure for reducing the annual burden of influenza. So I'm not sure we're there yet in terms of a completely satisfactory evaluation. And I don't know where our tech guy is, but it's unbelievable, eh? It happened again. So I'm going to go right through these next four slides. This is a long story at coffee. I'll tell you about it. I spent about a couple hours putting the slideshow together and about 7 hours trying to format it. So has it been worth it? Well, number one, if the program is going to make a difference, if we're going to put money into it, we have to make it effective. And we have to. If you're going to do it, you might as well get everybody done. I think we're actually having a little influenza vaccine fatigue, at least up until April of this year. Maybe in the autumn of this year we'll have a lot more interest in it, and we're hoping for that. We're at somewhere around 40%, as Danuta has showed you, but if we're going to have an impact, it has to be higher. I'm a great believer in immunizing around vulnerable people, and if you say that immunizing the whole population is immunizing around them, then let's do it right and not do it in a kind of a half-baked kind of way. We need more evaluation, and we've already talked about how difficult and but necessary that is. We need a better vaccine. As you know, influenza vaccine is based on the variable part of the hemagglutinin antigen. I've heard some people say that maybe there's hope that we'll be able to get a vaccine based on the more stable stem of the hemagglutinin antigen, and if that's the case, bravo. A vaccine that lasts more than 1 year and covers all influenza A's, wow, what a gift that would be to us all, right? And then consider the opportunity costs. What else can we spend these immunization dollars on? And how does this program measure up to other programs? How does it affect our programs that have a lot of other programs that have a lot of value? But now it's part of our regular programming. We are used to doing it. It increases the visibility of public health if you do it right. If people are freezing or being jostled around, that doesn't actually help the way people view public health. One good thing it did is it brought some of the younger medically compromised out of the woodwork. These people did not see themselves at risk. And they said, well, you know, we said, oh, good, you're here for your flu shot for the first time. Yeah, well, everybody else is, aren't they? So, you know, they didn't see themselves as being at risk. This was very, very unexpected and a benefit for them. Sorry, did I miss one there? Yes, and it may also make it easier for employers. For example, if you have a universal program, you may, although that, you know, Dr. McGeary and I will tell you that we're not doing as well as we should in Ontario even yet, it may make it easier to get better coverage for our health workers. It may decrease the circulation and illness if coverage is high enough. It has the potential to reduce the impact of influenza. We're not there in Ontario. One other good benefit is that it has prepared our public health infrastructure for mass influenza immunization. And, you know, I've already told our group, you know, be ready to do seasonal, starting in whenever you get the vaccine, like late September, once, and perhaps H1N1 once or even twice. So that actually is a benefit for us.